Good morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Mem Beis. We are on the Mishnah on Mem Aleph Amud Beis. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. The daf will be learned. L'zeichu Nishmas Lois Lupin Zaltzman. And we start with a Mishnah. The Mishnah begins, Yontov HaRishon Shachag Shechalos B'Shabbos. If the first day of Yontov falls out on Shabbos. So in other words, obviously, Yontov is a moving target. It's based on a calendaric date, and therefore could fall out at any point in time during the week. But if it falls on a Shabbos, and it does, once the calendar's been fixed, everyone knows that we don't make Yontov. I mean, we don't do anything. The calendar is fixed, so we go back only a short 1,700 years ago when the calendar was fixed. But once the calendar becomes a fixed entity, so Rosh Hashanah does not fall out on a Sunday or Wednesday or on a Friday, which means then that obviously the first day of Sukkot cannot fall out on a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. Lo Adu Rosh, that's the helpful way to remember. Lo Adu is the letters Aleph, Dalet, Vav. So fine, but as we all know, though, the first day of Sukkot can fall out on a Shabbos, because the first day of Rosh Hashanah can fall out on a Shabbos. So, but obviously when the Mishnah was being written, the Mishnah didn't even have a fixed calendar. The Mishnah was working with a moving calendar, so it could fall out any one of those days. Why that should be, Lo Adu Rosh, why Rosh Hashanah can't be on a Sunday, or on a Wednesday, or on a Friday. So just quickly, I'll explain. It's... There's one main consideration, and that is that we don't want Yom Kippur and Shabbos to fall back to back. Yom Kippur and Shabbos falling back to back, so that's 2 days of Shabbos. What's so bad about that? In other words, it's not an issue of preparation of food. So that's an issue of taking care of the dead. If in the event that somebody dies, let's say on the front end of a 2 day Shabbos, meaning on Shabbos Yom Kippur, someone dies on the front end of that, so then that's 48 hours where you can't bury, and that's just not covered on mace. That's not dignity. So why are we worried about that when it comes to Yontov? Meaning Yontov and Shabbos falls back to back. Why don't we worry about that? So we're going to learn together later on in Masechta Beitza, somewhere in the beginning of the Masechta, we're going to learn together that on Yontov, so you're allowed to bury. On the first day of Yontov, you'll ask a non-Jew to bury, and on the second day of Yontov, on Yontov Sheni Shel Galuyos, so we'll bury ourselves, which is not the practice nowadays, but okay, that's another discussion. That explains Rosh Hashanah not falling out on a Sunday, or on a Wednesday, meaning because if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Sunday, so then Yom Kippur will be, am I saying it right? Right, Sunday or Wednesday? No, Wednesday, I'm sorry, Wednesday or Friday, I apologize. Well, that takes care of Wednesday and Friday, because if you're right, if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Wednesday, so then Yom Kippur will fall out on Friday. And if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Friday, Yom Kippur will fall out on Sunday. Okay, good. Now I'm almost back to speed. What about Sunday? So the reason why when they fixed the calendar, they didn't have Rosh Hashanah fall on Sunday is because of Hoshana Rabbah. They don't want Hoshana Rabbah to fall out on Shabbos. What's so bad if Hoshana Rabbah falls out on Shabbos? If Hoshana Rabbah is not even an Isser Malacha. If Hoshana Rabbah, the seventh day of Sukkot, falls out on Shabbos, so then we're going to be losing out on our minhag, on our very special minhag that we do on Hoshana Rabbah, and the Chachamim did not want us losing out on that minhag, and actually we're going to be talking about that in a short couple days from now. Okay, that was a very lengthy introduction. Let's go back to the Mishnah. So Yom Tov Rishon Shachag Shecholos B'Shabbos. So if you have the first day of Yom Tov falls out on Shabbos, Kol HaMolechen Eslulavim LeBeis HaKnesses. So everyone would bring their lulavs to Shul before Shabbos. Now, what we're about to describe is, they took the lulav on Shabbos. Now, for all of us who know, we would say no. We would say, you don't take the lulav on Shabbos. We know, we're going to, again, just in a couple days from now, we're going to see this, that because of a gzeirah, because of an enactment that was made, so when whatever day Shabbos falls out on, well, so we don't take the lulav. So why don't we take the lulav? Gzeirah derabba, because of a gzeirah, that we may end up carrying it. So obviously, when the Mishnah is being written over here, the Mishnah is being written prior to the gzeirah's enactment. Okay, obviously. So they would take the lulavim to shul before Shabbos. L'machres mashkim avayim kol echad ve'echad. And then the next morning they would get to shul. In other words, it's interesting. They obviously didn't have an eruv. Otherwise they'd be allowed to carry it. But they didn't have an eruv. And so they brought the lulav to shul before Shabbos. And somehow they would identify the lulav. And then kol echad ve'echad makir shalom. Everyone recognized their own lulav. But no, lo. And they would take lulav. Okay, and that's a description of how the lulav was taken in shul on Shabbos when Shabbos and and the first day coincides. And then the Mishnah reminds us something which we already know, which is, on the first day, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of lulav, I have to take my own lulav. I can't borrow somebody else's lulav. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Yom Tov Rishon Shechag Shechal Yos B'Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi tells us that if on the first day of Yom Tov falls out on a Shabbos, V'shachach V'hotzi Es HaLulav. And let's say I didn't do what I should have done, which is I didn't take my lulav to shul on Friday afternoon, but rather I forgot. And now, absentmindedly, I picked up my lulav on Shabbos. I walked out to shul on Shabbos. I violated the isser of carrying on Shabbos. Now, usually, with an absent-minded violation of Shabbos, what's the onish? What's the punishment? Carbon chatas. The person has to bring a carbon. So Rabbi Yossi says, v'hotzias alulav v'rishus harabim, potter. He doesn't have to bring a carbon chatas. He is not saying it's okay. He's not saying you're allowed to do it. What he is saying that if you did it, you wouldn't have to bring a carbon chatas. Mimnei shehotzia b'rishus, because you took it out b'rishus. Now b'rishus sounds like it means with permission. That's not what the Mishnah means. The rishus over here, Rashi says it. Rashi says it straight out. Rashi says b'rishus mitzvah, meaning that you were engaged in a mitzvah. So even though you violated Shabbos, meaning you carried on Shabbos, but you're not going to have the general liability of having to bring a carbon chatas because justifiable. Now again, I'm walking a tightrope over here. It's not okay. It's not acceptable. You can't do it, but justifiable enough where you don't have to bring a carbon chatas. Okay. So in other words, this is a topic that's often discussed in the Gemara. Here's a area we're going to be discussing at length, and that is Torah b'dvar mitzvah, where I make a mistake, but I'm trying to do a mitzvah. So I know what I did is wrong, or I don't know what I did is wrong. I forgot. But I'm in the process of doing a mitzvah, and that mitzvah makes it somewhat justifiable, somewhat explainable. Okay, well, we'll talk more about it later on. We'll go back to this halacha of Rabbi Yossi. How do I know this? For where is this halacha derived that everyone has to take their own lulav on Sukkos? That means every one of us has to take the lulav. It's not like certain mitzvahs are relegated to Beis Din. I'll give you a simple example, counting the Shemitah years, every Rosh Hashanah. So we don't get up there in Rosh Hashanah and say, this is year one, this is year two. That's not a responsibility. I mean, we can know, we should know, but it's not a mitzvah for us to count the years of the Omer. That's a based in halacha. When it comes to lulav, as with most mitzvahs in the Torah, so it's incumbent upon every single one of us to do. Lachem mishalachem. The next word in the pasuk lakachtem is lachem. And you have to take it, meaning it has to be yours. Mishalachem lotzi sashol v'sagozol. So it can't be bartered and it can't be stolen. And from here it's derived that you can't fulfill the obligation of lulav with the obligation of lulav with somebody else's lulav. Now what can happen on the first day of Yom Tov, he can give it to you as a gift. Now although we generally say that business transactions on Shabbos is prohibited, but that's not an absolute, certain transactions are acceptable or totally permitted. Here's an example. It's a transaction. It's a bona fide legal transaction where I don't have a lulav on the first day for whatever reason. You do have a lulav. So here's what you could do. You could fulfill your obligation of lulav, and then if you're in an altruistic mood, you can then hand me the lulav and say, this is a matana. And we're going to go even one step further than that. Well, not only can you give it to me as a matana, but then you can be an Indian giver. You could say, look, I'll give it to you as a gift, but then I want you to give it back to me. And in fact, you can even make it a condition. And you can say, this gift is effective if you give it back to me. And if you don't give it back to me, then the gift is not effective. So you can even stipulate that I'll gift it to you, but only on the condition that you give it back to me. And the Gemara says, and I'll tell you a story. I know it sounds like we're talking Pesach and the Haggadah. Shayu b'ayim b'sfina, they were on a boat. So the only one who had a lulav was Rabbi Gamliel, shalachu be'elav zuz, and he paid a fortune of money for this lulav. 1,000 zuz. 1,000 zuz is 5 ksuvas. A ksuva, right? The amount of money that a husband leaves for his wife, either death or divorce. I mean, and that's 200 zuz, and that takes care of her for approximately a year. and you're talking now five times that amount, right? Just an unbelievable amount of money. Shalakhu be'alav zuz, not lo Rabbi Gamliel v'yatzabos. Rabbi Gamliel then fulfilled his obligation of lulav. He had a lulav. V'nasal Rabbi Yoshua b'matana. And now Rabbi Yoshua didn't have one, so Rabbi Gamliel gifted Rabbi Yoshua. Not lo Rabbi Yoshua v'yatzabos. V'nasal lo Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And now it's going being passed around the boat, being gifted from one tana to the next tana. So b'matana, not lo Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah v'yatzabos. Nasam b'matana Rabbi Akiva. Not lo Rabbi Akiva v'yatzabos. V'echzir lo Rabbi Gamliel. I'm sure if we spent more time, we could come up with some suggestion of why specifically that order, why Rabbi Akiva went last. And okay, I'm sure there's what behind that. But anyway, lama lameim hechziru. So the Gemara says, first of all, why did we need that last point that was to return to Rabbi Gamliel? Meaning, maybe yes, maybe no. But why do we need to know that? So the Gemara says, okay, that's exactly the point. The point is that considered a gift? A gift, even though a condition was made in the gift, where I'm going to give it to you, but you have to give it back to me. It works. It works in both directions. In fact,
Rabbi Gamliel didn't make that deal with Rabbi Akiva.
It didn't say so, but in other words, it's implied that it was there, or whatever. It didn't say so. The third Tosfos actually points out, you know, every time we talk about a condition, we never mention Tanai Kafel, we never mention the double language, we never mention Hein Kodem L'Lav, the positive before the negative, meaning there are certain things which are just assumed that we understand and we know. So, okay, how da merava ha'elecha esrog zeh amena shetachziru li. So, Rava makes a statement. Rava says that if I say to a person, here's the esrog, but on condition that you give it back to me, na lo v'yatzava hechziru, yatza. Lo hechziru, lo yatza. So now, if the condition is met, meaning, and the condition is, you got to give it back to me, so then the original gifting was good. But if you didn't give it back to me, that then means that the original gift is not good, because it wasn't a fulfillment of the condition, and therefore the second party didn't fulfill his obligation. Okay, good. So, matana menas lahachzir works. That's the first point that we learn from the story. Number two, lam lameim shalachu be'alav zuz. Why mention how much Rabbi Gamliel paid for it? Again, it's good information, but is it important information? Do we need to know it? So the Gemara says, yeah, lo odiecha kamach mitzvos chavivas aleihem. Yeah, it teaches us an important lesson. Love of a mitzvah. Meaning love of a mitzvah, so love is not logical, right? You know, no one in their right mind, logical mind, would pay 1,000 zuz for a lulav. No, Rabbi Gamliel would. In other words, he loves the lulav. The love of the lulav is so strong, he'll pay 1,000 zuz for the lulav. So amalei amar bar meim ala Rav Ashi abat sli kamat sli bei. So, you know, Mar Bar Amemar says to Rav Ashi, my father loved his lulav so much, he held it all the time, even during davening. So it was Shmon Esrei. He's davening Shmon Esrei, not Stan Hala. Shmon Esrei, he's holding the lulav. He loves the lulav so much. So Meizver lo yochaz adam tefillin biyado v'sefer Torah b'cheikov yispalel. So the Gemara says, well, look, we're in the middle of discussing love of a mitzvah. It's a beautiful discussion. But then the Gemara, you know how the Gemara gets. The Gemara gets technical. So then the Gemara says, hold on one second. You're not allowed to hold anything during davening, meaning as a way, as to not disturb your concentration during davening, so you're not allowed to hold anything. You know, it's interesting. They discuss holding the sitter during davening. Now, it's a fun, not the Gemara's not going to discuss it. It's discussed after the Gemara. It's a funny discussion, holding a sitter during davening, meaning what if you don't know davening? Okay, fine. And what if you do know davening, but you feel that the sitter helps your davening? Okay, but in other words, it's interesting that's even a discussion. But what's the discussion based on? It's based on our Gemara. Lo yochaz adam tefillin biyado. A person shouldn't hold tefillin in his hands. Meaning, we're not talking about not wearing tefillin. We're talking about just holding the pair of tefillin in his hand. Who knows? Maybe he's in you're in an airport and you don't want it taken from you, right? So you're just holding in your hands. Whatever the case is, you shouldn't do that. So lo yochaz adam tefillin biyado v'sefer Torah b'cheiko. Don't hold the sefer Torah. Meaning, imagine. In other words, don't hold the sefer Torah. Well, yeah, but I want to hold it. No, not during davening. During davening, you have to be concentrating. You have to be focused. You can't hold it. V'spal v'lo yashdim behem mayim. And other things you can't do while holding tefillin and sefer Torah. You can't urinate while holding your tefillin or your sefer Torah. V'lo yishim behem. You can't sleep next to them for fear that you may pass gas. Lo shenes keva v'lo shenes arai v'am shmuel. Sakim v'ka'ara kikar amavs hare elu kayote behem. And Shmuel tells us that it's not just limited to these holy items, but a knife, a plate, a dish, money. So, you can't hold any of those. In other words, during davening, You can't hold anything. So what are you doing holding your lulav? So the Gemara's answer is, Hasam lav mitzvah ninu v'tarid bahu, hacha mitzvah ninu v'lo tarid bahu. So the Gemara makes a distinction. Everything we just mentioned, the Torah, the tefillin, the plate, all those things, they're not a mitzvah. Meaning what? The Torah is not a mitzvah. It means that for that moment, there's no obligation, there's no reason why you should be holding the Torah. So for that, it's not a mitzvah. But on Sukkot, so holding of a lulav, with the other three minim, that's a mitzvah. So the Gemara says that that's something which will not distract you, will not disturb your concentration, because you're holding it's right now the fulfillment of a mitzvah. Hacha mitzvah ninu v'lo tarid bahu. Okay, Tanya. The Gemara quotes a brayso, Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok Omer, kacha yimenagim shel anshei Yerushalayim. People of Yerushalayim, especially if you go around the old city, you'll find a lot of holy people there. So that's not a new fad. That's been around for centuries. Anshei Yerushalayim, people in Yerushalayim, Adam Yosef may base of a lulav biyado. So during Sukkot, so a person goes out and he's holding the lulav in his hands. Holach lebeis hakadesh lulav biyado, goes to shul, lulav is in his hands. Kari kriyashma umispalo v'lulav biyado. So like we just described, you're saying Shema and you're davening. So you're holding the lulav in your hand. Kari b'torah v'noseis kapav. Okay, what about reading from the Torah? This is a tricky one. And in Siyas Kapayim, Duchanim. You can't hold the lulav during those two events. Kriya Sefer Torah, you have to be holding the Torah. And in Siyas Kapayim, so your hands have to be raised and elevated. So there, Manicha Agave Karka. So even the Anshei Yerushalayim would have to put the lulav down at some point. Holich Levakar Cholam Menachem Avelim, but let's go back to the times where they do hold it. So let's say they do the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, or let's say they do the mitzvah of Nicham Avelim, lulav abiyado. So then they're holding the lulav in their hand. Nichlas beis hamedrash, mishagu lulav abiyad beno, abiyad avdu, abiyad shlucho. So the Gemara says, but if he goes into the beis medrash, so he hands the lulav over to his son, his eved, his shliach, my kamashmal al-diach, kama hayu, zrizim b'mitzvos, and here, they're such a zariz. They love their mitzvah so much, they go around with it all the times. Just a couple of interesting points over here. Number one, what is he doing? What is he doing with the zulav? So one of the activities that we mentioned is nicham avelim. He's comforting the mourner. Well, who's mourning? Meaning we're talking about sukkahs and chol hamoed, and God forbid somebody has a kara of one of the relatives died before yontif. So that means that yontif is going to break the shiva. There's not going to be mourning. And God forbid, so you have a karav died during Yontif, so we know that the shiva gets pushed off. The burial will take place on Yontif, but shiva will get pushed off until afterwards. So the sheet of the Rambam is that there's literally no avelus during Yontif itself. It's very hard, it's very difficult, obviously, but there's no avelus during Yontif itself. So one of the things mentioned over here is that you're menachem avel, you comfort the mourner while you're holding the lulav. Okay, I don't have a good solution. It's a little bit tricky to understand what the Bryce means by that.
Maybe you would think that he wouldn't do the mitzvah.
Well, not could be,
obvious,
and in other words, it's great.
Right, he's not in it.
Right after I said I don't have an answer. It could be that nicham avelim over here doesn't mean technical nicham avelim. Nicham avelim over here could just simply mean, in other words, he's not practicing avelos, but. Okay, but he's sad and you want to go over. That could be what it means, the Bryce means. Anyway, it could be.
Can he give a gift on Yom Kippur?
Huh?
Can he give a gift on Yom Kippur?
Yeah.
If you bring something on Shabbos, a bottle of wine, it's you have to drink it or something.
Yeah, in other words, you have to make use out of it. So here you're making use out of it. Okay, and the other interesting thing is that, and it's just another interesting point, is that Bikur Cholam is mentioned over here before Nicham Avelim. Meaning, if I were to ask you, it's a good riddle. It's a great. It's not a riddle. It definitely is going to force you to think. Well, like given the choice, if you have a choice between Nicham Avelim versus Bikur Cholam, which should come first? Right. You can say either one. Either one of them will. Either answer will be not wrong. I'm not saying right, but it won't, either answer will be wrong, not wrong. So the Rambam has an opinion. How do I know it's a Rambam says? How come I'm saying the Rambam has an opinion? Because there's no source, and the Rambam when he speaks about it, he says nearly, I think. So the Rambam's not quoting a Gemara. The Rambam's saying an opinion. So he says my opinion is that Nicham Avelin should come before Bikur Cholim. Okay, why? So the Rambam actually explains himself. He says that when it comes to Nicham Avelim, so there are two people who are being comforted. The living and the dead. In other words, there's a Nicham Avelim applies not only for those who are here, but also for the departed as well. So the Rambam says, so there, you'll forgive me. I don't even mean this as a joke. And it's true Shampurim, I know, but you're killing two birds with one stone. But in other words, you're taking care of two people. You're taking care of the living and you're taking care of the dead. By Bikur Cholim, certainly taking care of one person. So the Rambam says, I think Nicham Avelim should come first. So it is a little bit interesting over here that in the list, in the order, so we have first Bikur Cholim and then Nicham Avelim, and the Rambam would prefer the other way. Okay, anyway.
Bikur Cholim or saving the
Cholim? No, Bikur Cholim just simply means visiting him. If you're doing medicine, if you're saving him, that's different. That's Pikuach Nefesh. That's the ace card. So Rabbi Yossi Omar, although with Bikur Cholim, though, he does, his condition does improve. Gemara Nedarim, we did that a long time ago, but the Gemara Nedarim says that the expectation is that when you visit him, you're not just there to just pop in and say hello, but you try to make his condition better. Amar Abaye, okay, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yossi Amar Yontav Amar Abaye. We're now on the very top of Mem Beis Amud Aleph, and here we begin. We begin the discussion of Tobit of our mitzvah, where again, what do we learn in our Mishnah? In our mission, we learned that you should, our mission was describing a time in history when we were taking lulav on Shabbos. You got to bring your lulav to shul before Shabbos. You cannot carry the lulav on Shabbos. Again, assuming no Eruv. So then the Mishnah says, and what if you forgot? And what if you picked up your lulav from your house and marched it to shul and you walked through a Rishus HaRabim, which would be a violation of Shabbos? So Rav Yossi says, you don't have to bring a Karban Chatas. You're exempt from having to bring a Karban Chatas because it's understandable, it's justifiable. Again, if asked the question, can I do it? The answer would be no. But once you did it, you don't have to bring a Karban Chatas. Lo Shanu, the Gemara now explains the top of Membeis Amud Aleph, Lo Shanu Ela Shelo Yatsa Bo. That's only if you haven't fulfilled your obligation. Aval yatsa bo chayev. So the Gemara says, but once you, once you fulfilled your obligation, you're going to be chayev. Meaning, what is Abaye saying? Abaye is basically saying like this: it's justifiable, but only if you haven't actually fulfilled the mitzvah yet. If you've already fulfilled the mitzvah, you have no excuse in terms of why it is that you picked it up and you carried out in the Rishus HaRabim. Now you'll say you forgot. That was Shabbos. Okay, so you're a show gig. That means that you should have remembered. You should have been more careful. You have to bring a Karban Chatas. So this Petur of Rav Yossi, that you don't have to bring a Karban Chatas, is only in the event that you haven't yet fulfilled the obligation. So now we can explain the behavior that he carried to shul on Shabbos. Yeah, but he hasn't fulfilled his obligation. Once he fulfilled his obligation, done. So then he no longer has a patur, he's no longer considered a toa b'dvar mitzvah. So the Gemara says, I don't understand hamadag bay nafak bay. So the Gemara says, hold on one second. If you're picking it up to go to shul, so the very moment that you picked it up, you have fulfilled your obligation, because even though there's shaking involved in the lulav na'anuin, which we talked about earlier, okay, but that we discussed, that's shayari hamitzvah. It's important, but That's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is simply to pick it up. What about the fact that you didn't have kavana? So it's interesting. Tosos over here says, you look at the top Tosos on the Amud, this could be perhaps one of the Gemaras that supports the viewpoint that mitzvahs do not require kavana. Because the Gemara over here assumes you pick it up, you fulfill your obligation. Okay, so and that obviously is a very long discussion, a bigger discussion. But anyway, just I mentioned the Tosfos. So the moment you pick it up, so you fulfill your obligation. Amar Abaye kisha hafchal. So Abaye says you held it upside down. Do you remember just a couple days ago we talked about holding it upside down is not fulfilling your obligation because derech yedei lasan, you have to hold it in the way that it grows from the ground. Rav Amar filo tamer shlo hafchal by my skin and kigon shorzia bekli. Rav gives a different answer, and that is that you didn't hold it in your hand, but you held it in a vessel. You held it in a cup. And so therefore, you didn't fulfill your obligation because you didn't actually physically hold the lulav itself. The Gemara says, wait one second. 4 short days ago, in the Daf Yomi, we learned Netila ayyede davar acher, that if you hold it through something else, meaning even if I don't hold it directly, I hold it indirectly, we learned that that works. And not only did we learn that that works, who said that? None other than Rava himself. So the Gemara says, "Vaha Rava hu damar lekicha ayyede davar acher shma lekicha." Yeah, but Rava taught us 4 short days ago that lekicha through something else is considered lekicha. So the Gemara says, "Hani mila derech kavod." The Gemara says, "No, that's only if you do it in a way which is bekavod. You wrap up. You're right, but like we discussed earlier, you wrap up your hands in scarf. But if it's in a if the lulav is in a box and you're picking up the box, that's not a derech kavod, and that's not considered lekicha even according to Rava. Ava derech bizayon lo. Okay. Amar Rav Huna. Good. So far, what have we seen so far? Our Mishnah is bringing down the sheet of Rav Yossi. If you're Torah b'dvar mitzvah, so you're going to be exempt from having to bring a carbon chatos because it is somewhat justifiable. Okay. And then Abai's qualification, yes, Torah b'dvar mitzvah, but you actually have to be involved in doing the mitzvah. If you already fulfilled your obligation, so then we don't have this exemption of Torah b'dvar mitzvah. Another application of Rav Yossi comes up right now, brought to us by Rav Huna. Amar Rav Huna. We are on Membeis Amud Aleph. We're about 8 lines from the top of the Amud. Amar Rav Huna, Omer Ya Rav Yossi, Olas Ha'ov Shenimtzeis Bein Agafayim. I find a bird which is an ola. Birds in the Beis Hamikdash can only come as one of two carbons. Either it's an ola or it's a chatas, and that's it. There are no other. The birds do not make it to any other type of carbon. Either ola or chatas. And that's funny. With only two possibilities, one of the most challenging and difficult mishnayos. Probably the most challenging Mishnayos is about the confusion you have if, let's say, two birds get mixed together and one's an ol and the other's a chatas, and you'll see it's interesting. Those of you who like math, you'll like those Mishnayos. It gets very involved. But that's it. Birds can only come out of two. And what happens is I have an ola bird, and it gets mixed up with a bunch of chatas birds. Now, what's the big difference between ola and chatas? There are a number of fundamental differences, but one fundamental difference is that a chatas is eaten by the kohanim, and the ola is burnt entirely on the mizbeach. And by a bird, there's not even hide. You throw the entire bird up on the mizbeach, and you burn the bird on the mizbeach in its entirety. In fact, you're not allowed to eat the bird. So let's say a kohen comes, and there are a bunch of birds that are there. Most of them are chatas birds. One of them is an ola bird. There's no bittel. V'kasav chatas ofiv achla potter. And he eats it, even though he's eating now an ola bird, he doesn't have to bring a carbon. Now what carbon are we talking about? So we're not talking about a carbon chatas. There's no carbon. There's no chatas violation. There's no kares violation for eating an ola bird. But what are we talking about? Benefiting from the Beis HaMikdash. That is called me'ila. And there's a carbon me'ilah that's brought, an asher me'ilah that's brought. So he's exempt. Why? Because this Cohen right now, there's a bunch of other chatas birds. He got mixed up, he got confused. By accident, he ate an ola bird, but in an attempt to eat chatas. So my kamash wanted to tell b'dvar mitzvah pater. So the Gemara says, and that's coming to teach us that you're told b'dvar mitzvah, meaning he's trying to do a mitzvah, he's trying to eat a chatas bird, and by accident, he ate an ola bird. Hainu hach. The Gemara says, Rav Huna, that's an excellent example. But what contribution did you make to the discussion? Meaning, on our own, we could have came up with that example as well, ostensibly. The Gemara says, no. There's a difference between the two cases. And here's the distinction we can make. In the case of the lulav, so there, you're en route to doing a mitzvah, and you know what? When the day's over, you're going to do the mitzvah. Meaning, you picked up the lulav, you walked to shul, you walked through Rishus HaRabim. Okay, fine, you transferred on Shabbos. Again, you should not do that. Right? It's usur, it's prohibited to do that. Okay, but you were involved in doing a mitzvah, and when you get to shul, you're going to actually fulfill the mitzvah. Good, justifiable. But here, let's think about what the Kohen just did. He ate a bird, he thought it was a chatas, it turns out to be an ola, got mixed up together. Okay, now when he finished eating the bird, did he do a mitzvah? No. He didn't do a mitzvah, right? There was no mitzvah, he's not prepping to do a mitzvah. In other words, no mitzvah. So here, one could have made the distinction, the delineation. In the case of lulav, he's en route to doing a mitzvah, and he will do a mitzvah. Here, zero mitzvah. Not doing a mitzvah, and not on his way to doing a mitzvah, meaning no mitzvah is being done, and this is still considered Torah B'Dvar mitzvah. So it is a very serious contribution that Rav Huna made to our discussion. The Gemara is bothered by the following. We have a brisa, and this brisa is brought to us by none other than Rabbi Yossi, the same one who subscribed to this whole concept of Torah B'Dvar mitzvah. If I shech the carbon tamid, and it has not been examined, every carbon that is going to be shot in the Beis HaMikdash needs a pre-examination to make sure that it has no physical blemish. He takes it out. It was not pre-checked. He shechs it for the purpose of bringing a carbon tamid. And chayav chatas. And it turns out to be a blemished animal. And it turns out now that he shechs it on Shabbos with no mitzvah. It does not yield a mitzvah. He's chayav a carbon chatas. And on top of that, tzarech tamid achir. And on top of that, he also needs to bring another carbon tamid. Now, simple question. Okay, I understand he made a mistake, but wasn't he trying to do a mitzvah? Meaning, can't he benefit from the justification, the explanation that we've been giving up until now, that you're a Torah B'Dvar mitzvah, and why does he have to bring a carbon chatas? Amalei bar mina dehahi. So the Gemara says, leave this out of the discussion. Why? Da'it marla amarav shmuel bar chatai. Interesting name. Amar Rav Amnuna Saba, Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Ashian, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Kegon Sheviyo Milishka Sheino Mivukarim. So he says, you know what happened over here? He went to the wrong chamber. Going to the wrong chamber, the way Rashi explains it, Rashi right before the Gemara, going to the wrong chamber, that's not justifiable. Even if he's doing a mitzvah, meaning... I'm just going to use simple terminology that I think we can all understand instead of my scientific terminology. He's a knucklehead. And in fact, he's such a knucklehead that, in other words, the Torah B'Dvar mitzvah means I'm trying to do a mitzvah, so excuse me that I traveled on Shabbos, I carried something on Shabbos. Or excuse me that instead of eating the chatas sof, I ate an ola sof, which happens to have been right there. Here, you walked into the wrong chamber in order to get out the animal, so that there's no excuse. It really is no justification. He's a shogeg. He obviously didn't have there was no malintent, but still it's a shogeg. It's inadvertent, but he should have been more careful. And even though he was doing a mitzvah, but still it's too gross an error that you can say that he was a Torah B'Dvar mitzvah. I want to make one correction that I said earlier, which was incorrect, and that is I said that the animal is no good if it has a blemish. If you look at Tosfos over here, okay, the fourth Tosfos down on the Amud, Tosfos says no. It says that even if the animal turned out not to be blemished, the fact that it wasn't pre-checked is a disqualification. It needs Bikur Dal Yamim. It needs the examination 4 days. He reminds us of what we learned back in Psachim, Gzeirah Shavah. But anyway, I'm sorry. I was wrong. Okay. I'm glad I caught myself now. Next, moving along. Next Mishnah. Mekabel Sisha Miad Benam Miad Baala Machzira Salamayim B'Shabbos. So you can the handoff of the lulav. Okay. You came home from shul. Right, you're done with the lulav for the day, so you can hand it to your wife, so she can put it in a jar of water. Right, frequently asked questions. Probably the most frequently asked question I get is, how do I keep my lulav fresh? So you heard me say this before. The truth of the matter is that there's no way to keep it fresh. Okay, good. It's going to go bad. The lulav is going to go dry. The aravos or the leaves are going to fall off. Like, okay, that's the honest answer. No one enjoys hearing the honest answer. So then I make up a story, and then wrap it up, put it in the fridge, and okay. But fine.
Anything
for a dollar. Yeah, correct. Anything for a dollar. So the that's great, and please quote me out of context. That's perfect. But anyway, back in the good old days, though, they actually put in water. In other words, they didn't have refrigeration, which, by the way, is a good way to delay the aging process. But they didn't have refrigeration, so what do? So the hadasim, the aros, they actually plunked right in water. So mikabel sisha miyad benam miyad baalom machzir asalamayim. You can return it to water b'Shabbos, and you can do so on Shabbos. Rav Yehuda omer b'Shabbos machzir. Now on Shabbos you could return it. B'yom tov mosifin on yom tov, you can actually add to the water. And uvamoed and cholamoed machlifim, you can actually change the water. And the way Rashi understands it, what is it? What's the difference between mosifin and machlifin? Meaning Rashi, if you took a look at Rashi machzirin, right? Rashi b'shabbos machzirin sharei mikar natlum hayom. Avalom mosifin ma'im, you can't add water on Shabbos. Kol shekein shein machlifin, you certainly can't change the water. Lishbroch hazelav las etzachem tzonei mehani detarich letkunei mana. Because that's too much tircha, that's too much involvement on Shabbos. Minimize the amount of involvement. It's a we had this discussion back in Shabbos about getting too involved, and even though you're not violating a malacha per se, and then on Chol HaMoed machlifin mitzvah lahachlif, meaning on Chol HaMoed, obviously you got after the first day of Yontif in Eretz Yisrael, you got 6 more days to try to keep them fresh. So therefore, change the water, get nice fresh water every day, so that you can hopefully keep your hadas and aravos fresh for the next 6 days. Okay, good. That's the first halacha of the Mishnah. Next, katan hayadela naneh chay v'lulav, and then you have a katan, and he knows how to shake the lulav. Right, you give it to a child, again, depending on the child, depending on the age, depending on his development. So you give it to a very young child, so he smacks it on the ground. Okay, you're not old enough. So good. So there's no mitzvah of chinuch. But if he's old enough where he knows how to bring it to shul and he knows how to shake the lulav correctly, so at that point in time, now there's a mitzvah of chinuch there. You want to educate your child on how to do the mitzvah, so at that point in time, you give it to him. So far, so good. We start... right? And then you have your lachem issues on day one. Okay, which the Mishnah doesn't discuss, but yes, you're correct. Pshita, the Gemara right away is bothered by a very simple question, which is, you hand it to your wife so she could put it in the jar of water. Okay, yeah, that's okay. Meaning,
there's a mitzvah?
Huh? No.
She just puts it in the water.
No, the mitzvah, all she's doing is she's putting in the water.
What can he do?
So, of course he could do it himself.
Right.
Okay, but he just, you know.
Oh,
that's the issue. Pshit amav detemahol v'ishala barzcha yuvahi emalo sekabel kamash malan. I might have thought, says the Gemara, it's a havamina. I might have thought that for the woman, it's mupsa. She is la bar chiyuva. She has no obligation to take the lulav. Again, if she wants to take the lulav, by all means, right? She'll get points, right? And don't ask me how many, because I'm not the accountant. I don't know. But in other words, of course she can, but she's not obligated to do so. So I might have thought that come Shabbos, so this lulav for her will be mupsa. That's the Havamina. And the Kamash Malan is that it's not Muksa. Now again, every time we hit a Kamash Malan, like it's such an important discussion. And I know it's the Daf Yomi, so I'm gonna zoom by this. But to know, like, what's the Kamash Malan? That it's not Muksa, that it is Muksa, but in this case it's okay. In other words, it's always a critical understanding of the Gemara, of what the Gemara's Kamash Malan is coming to teach us. Meaning, practically it's okay, but why is it okay? Okay, that's obviously becomes a more involved discussion. Kan hayodea linaanea. Know how to shake the lulav. Tan rabban kan yodea linaanea chai v'lulav. So if he knows how to shake, so good. So he's obligated in lulav. Meaning, there's a mitzvah now of chinuch. Lihisateif. So the child knows how to wrap himself up. Chayv b'tzitzis. So now he's obligated in tzitzis. Okay, there's ituf. When you put on your tzitzis now, all of us are probably pretty confused by this Gemara, because we think of tzitzis, we think of talis katan. We think of the small beged that we put underneath our clothing. Okay, good, talis katan. But in the good old days, they used to wear the talisim as part of their clothing, on top of their clothing, as an extra layer of clothing. So, in other words, you go to Tzfas today and you'll find many people over there doing it. To us, it seems strange, but okay. But and part of the mitzvah of putting on a talis is ituf. Ituf means wrapping ourselves up in the talis. Now, most of us don't keep our talis ourselves wrapped in the talis, but at least during the bracha, immediately after the bracha, so we're misatef, we're wrapped in the talis, at least for that point in time. Okay, on another occasion, I don't know if we're going to discuss in the context of Daf Yomi, but there's a procedure in terms of how to do proper ituf. But anyway, once the child knows how to do that, So then you give him he starts to wear the talis. So Sfardim ostensibly do it right. They wear the talis and once their bar mitzvah. And Ashkenazim, can you explain? I'm saying before, correct. That's what the Gemara here is telling us. That as long as you, right, once you know how to do it, so then you start even before your bar mitzvah. Okay, yeah, point taken. The Ashkenazim, I don't know. I should know. I know. I'm sitting on this end of the room, so I should know what the explanation is for the Ashkenazim. I don't know why it is that we wait until marriage to put on the talis gadol. Okay, lishmor tefillin, aviv lokeach lo tefillin. Now, once he knows how to safeguard his tefillin, there's an element of shimur, meaning tefillin. It's not just simply you put on the tefillin, but you have to have clean body, clean mind, concentration, right? It's the reason why we don't wear tefillin all day. Meaning, why shouldn't we? Meaning, it's a mitzvah. Let's wear tefillin all day. No, because it requires shimur. You have to be meticulous. You have to be careful. So that we limit ourselves to the wearing of tefillin during shacharis. And that limitation extends also to being a child. Meaning, when you're a child, so you, in other words, there is a mitzvah of chinuch, but we limit the mitzvah of chinuch. Again, various menhagim in terms of when exactly before the bar mitzvah the child puts on tefillin. Some do it a month, some do it a week. Okay, but the idea is that it's not we're gonna be more careful because of this idea of shimur. Yodei ledaber avav lomdo Torah. The moment he knows how to speak, so our dad is obligated to teach him Torah v'kriya shma. So Torah ma'i. So now, what exactly do we mean by Torah? So Amar of Menuna Torah Tzivolana Moshe Marash Akilas Yaakov. Teach him the pasuk found at the end of the Sefer Torah. The Kriya Shema Ma'i, Pasuk Rishon. As far as Kriya Shema is concerned, so Pasuk Rishon. Meaning, again, it's just the child's just learning how to talk, so obviously you can't teach him all of Torah, you can't teach him all of Kriya Shema, so you got to pick your spots. What spots are we choosing? So these spots, which are obviously, you know, have fundamental ideas contained in these Pesukim. Hayodeh Lishmar Gufo Ochlin Al Gufo Taharos. If he knows how to safeguard his body, in other words, he's able to keep his body from being tahor, from being tamei. So you can give him tahor foods to eat. Lishmor es yadav ochlin al yadav taharos. If he knows how to safeguard his hands, meaning hands have an extra level of shmira. We learned already a number of times since we started the daf again from the beginning from brachos that your hands are shein l'tumah. Your hands are by default a second degree tumah. This is what's the idea of Yadayim. In fact, there's an entire Masechta tucked away in Taharos dedicated to this topic, which in the Daf we don't get to see together. But you shomer Yadayim, you wash your hands, you safeguard your hands. So then Ochlin al Yadav Taharos. So if he handles foods, so then at that point in time you could trust him. Hayodeh Lishael, if let's say he knows how to ask questions, or you can ask him questions. So now, Bereshus HaYachid, Sveikotam, Bereshus HaRabim, Sveikotar. What's going on over here? This is a classic discussion of Safek Tuma. If I have a question about Tuma, whether Tuma comes into contact with, whether an item comes into contact with Tuma or does not come into contact with Tuma, so the rules that guide us are the following. If the Safek occurs in a private area, Sveikotame. If it occurs in a public area, Sveikotar. Private and public are not the same definitions here, as they are vis-a-vis Shabbos. Private and public just simply means how many people are there. Two is private, three already is public. And another basic rule regarding Safek Tuma is that the Safek has to be relative to a person who has the ability to think, enough so that you can ask him a question and he can come back with a basic response. However, if the Safek involved no person, the suffix involved just inanimate objects, so then we don't have the rules of suffix tumor. We don't have the regular rules of suffix tumor. Okay, why should that be? You'll take a look at Rashi. Rashi goes through the Gemara in Sota. Okay, I'd like to plow ahead and finish the parak. Hayodeh lefrosh kapav chokin lo chuma beveis agranos. He knows how to duchen. He knows how to be poris kapav, so you give him truma from the base of granus. You give it the granary. He's allowed to be issued truma. Top of membeis amud beis ayodel ishchot. He knows how to shecht. He's a child, but he gets it. So right, his father, he grows up on a farm. Dad's a shochet. He's been washing dad enough times, so he knows how to shecht. So he can check. The child can shecht. Okay, but you need the halacha of ogadol omed al gabav. An adult has to be standing. Why? Supervision. Yachol Lechol Kezias Dagon, once he's able to eat a kezias of grain, meaning that he's developed enough where this infant, now a toddler, is able to chew on wheat. So marchikim etzawaso mememay raglav arba amos. So that means that his waste material, his excrement, his urine, has status of excrement and urine, and therefore you have to move away 4 amos from it. By the way, just as a point, we discussed this back in Brachos. If there's a foul odor that comes off of it, so then whether it does or does not have status, obviously you cannot daven within an area of foul odor. The Gemara over here is describing where even if it does not have a foul odor. Amar Rav Chista v'hushi achol ochlo bechdei achilas pras. That is not only the child has to be able to chew on wheat, but it has to be able to eat it within the time of tei achilas pras. We guesstimate that it's somewhere between 4 to 9 minutes. Amar Rav Chia b'reid Rav Yeba v'gadol af apishen yachol achol bechdei achilas pras techsiv v'yosef das yosef machov. Now, this criteria of being able to eat kezayis bechdei achilas pras, that is only for the for the child. But once you get to an adult, at that point in time, even if you can't chew and even if you can't eat a kezayis within a kezayis achilas pras, your waste matter has a status. Why should that be? Yosef das Yosef machov, because the more you know and the smarter you get, the more painful it is. Okay, that's not me speaking. That's Shlomo HaMelech speaking. He knows what he's talking about. If you know, if the child is able to eat kazayit sli, so then shechtekar pesach. Shenemar ishlef yachlo. Rabbi Yehuda omer ash yachol levarer achila. Rabbi Yehuda says that it has to be discerning in his eating. Ketzad noslo tzror v'zorko egos v'notlo. In other words, the child doesn't just put anything into his mouth. If it's a pebble, he puts it aside. If it's an egos, he eats it. So in other words, he's discerning. At that point in time, you can give him from Karm Pesach. Hajon alech lulav agazol, and that is the end. That's the conclusion of the third parak of Sukkah. In other words, you're returning the item into water. You're not putting it in for the first time. So again, by a lulav, which is not muksa, yes. By a cut flower, which is muksa, so no. But the Mishnah is describing a lulav. Again, this all goes back to where before the gzera. Now we have the gzera, so now for us it's muksa.